This is an oral history interview with Elmer J. Manson of 1740 Wellington Road in Lansing, Michigan. The recording was made by Jim Walkinshaw on November 15, 1989 at the Oldsmobile History Center at 4000 North Grand River, Lansing. This is tape number one of two tapes. The tapes were made in conjunction with a program by the Lansing Regional Chamber of Commerce, the REO's Transportation Museum, and the Lansing Public Library called the Voices of Lansing. Well, Elmer, if we could just start with your name and your address and your phone number, please.
I'm Elmer Manson. I live at 1740 Wellington Road here in Lansing. I have an office at 1209 East Kalamazoo. And do you want a phone number?
Yeah, sure. Both places if you want.
Okay. The office is 372-2191.
Okay.
And the home is 484-5023.
Okay.
You won't find me at home much.
That's all right. That's okay. Why don't, just for the tape's purpose, take us back to when were you born?
I was born in Malone, New York, which is in the upper part of New York State, right along the Canadian border.
Okay.
May 27, 1913.
All right.
That's one date I can remember.
That's right. Very good. Now, you came to Lansing when?
I came to Lansing in 1946.
All right.
I had just finished a tour of duty with the military at that time in the field artillery.
All right.
And I had had an architectural office in northern New York, but northern New York was something like the UP in Michigan.
Oh, yes.
And it was not exactly a fertile field for architecture. And so we decided that we should make a move. And one of my former classmates from Cornell University, Mal Williams, was with the Warren S. Holmes Architectural Office. And so he had written to Marie, my wife, asking that I come for an interview here before I made any permanent relocation. We liked it here. So we came, and I worked for them for 2 years. They wanted me to go down to Hammond, Indiana, and run a branch office for them. And I asked a few questions about Hammond, Indiana, and we decided that we would rather stay in Lansing, Michigan. And feeling that lightning does not strike twice in the same place, we decided if I had refused the Holmes Company of a promotion, they thought it was a promotion, that I should open my own office. And Lansing has been very, very kind to us in these intervening years.
Yes.
So that's how I got to Lansing.
Okay. And you had taken your architectural work at Cornell, you mentioned.
Yes.
And when did that all happen?
Well, Cornell Architecture is a 5-year course.
All right.
I had a state scholarship for 4 years. So when the 5th year came along, I didn't have money enough to go back to school, nor did my parents. So my sister loaned me some money and I went to Europe. That was only for about 6 weeks.
Okay.
Then I got a job in the aluminum company at Messina, and I earned enough money to go back to school. So I actually got my bachelor's degree in architecture in 1937.
All right.
Then Marie got an opportunity to instruct in the practice teaching school at Cornell during the year of 1940. Those were pretty tough years for architects.
Sure.
So,
still part of the Depression.
Yes. And the building industry had not recovered there was an upswing about that time. Anyway,
yeah.
Being in as I was unemployed at that time, I went back to at Cornell, got my master's degree in architecture, and I was really quite surprised when my thesis was awarded the Charles Goodwin Sands Medal for design. So I was very pleased and quite impressed. I don't think it helped me a bit. It was something I could hang on the wall.
So were you and Marie married at that time while you were going to school?
Let me see. I graduated in June of 37 without a job. In July of that year, I got a job, and we were married on July 24th.
All right.
So
okay.
We were married.
Busy summer.
Yeah. We went, when I went back from my master's, yes. We were married.
Okay. All right. Well, let's come to the Lansing part of it then, now that we understand your background a little bit. What were some of the things which you did as an early architect here in Lansing?
Well, let me see. Maybe I should talk not about the architectural aspects of it, but some of the other things which I did, which kind of got me started on the way. There was an article in the paper at that time that the Board of Water and Light were interested in the economic development of the Lansing area. So having taken my master's degree in planning at Cornell, I wrote a letter to Hub Bates, who was chairman of the committee, saying that I would be glad to help wherever I might. So obviously I was invited to join the committee. That was a very, very interesting thing. Eckert, who was general manager of the Board of Water and Light, was a very supportive member in that committee. And so that worked out that Ken Welch, who was a shopping center consultant and planner from Grand Rapids, and I got to know Ken quite well after that, and he was a pretty sharp guy. Anyway, he was retained to do the development plan for Lansing. And of course, when I got involved in that, there also was a strong suggestion that I become a member of the Chamber of Commerce.
Okay. So when was all this happening?
I assume this would have been about 1948.
All right. Very shortly after you came, then.
Sure. I worked home for 2 years.
Yep.
I put up my shingle, and read this into the record, a great many people around town remember Bill Carver. He had been a classmate of mine at Cornell. He had been a partner in the architectural office that we had in Messina. And so he was just getting back from the Navy, and I wrote asking if he'd like to join me. So he came, we formed Manson and Carver, and a great many people around town seem to remember that.
Mm-hmm.
So does that answer your question?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, keep chugging along there. Now, you started then with the chamber in that activity on the power company.
Yes.
And what other kinds of things were going on in the city at that time, Elmer, that you were dealing with? You must have been doing more than just working with the chamber, obviously.
Yes. As I said, Lansing was kind to us. When I formed the office, my projections were that if I could do 10 or 15 houses a year, I'd be able to pay the grocers.
Mm-hmm.
And The first week that I had the office, I put the usual announcement in the State Journal. Monday morning, I got a call from the Methodist Church in Williamston. They wanted an addition, and within 10 days, Joe Atwood from the North School District came in, and they were going to do a four-room addition to a school out there. Mm-hmm. So I never did do very many residential. It's been mostly institutional, commercial, a fair amount of work for General Motors, so I guess that would be industrial. So we had quite a general practice.
Okay. So the first things that you remember were doing on the North School?
Right.
Okay. And the out of Williamston of the church?
Yes. Okay. I remember the North School because Bill Clapp at that time was the person in the State Education Department that reviewed plans.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very gung-ho on bilateral lighting. And so we had light coming in from a clerestory over the corridor, and we had baffles to keep the direct light off the kids in the schoolroom.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill was very pleased with that. Also, concentric ring electrical fixtures, which would use a silver bowl light that reflected the light up to the ceiling, and it gave excellent illumination mm-hmm. for the children. But it was also extremely expensive because the light went up to the ceiling and a good share of it stuck there, never came back down. It got lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so despite the fact that the State Education Department were quite proud of that building, at least they took a lot of people to see it, within 10 years, they had put an acoustical ceiling across, cutting off the bilateral lighting, and they had plain old fluorescent fixtures. So that's the way progress is done.
But Elmer, you must have, as time went along there, how did you change from an organization standpoint? How did your company, quote, change?
That was a case of slow growth, for which probably I should be thankful for,
mm-hmm.
because we worked from a workforce of 4 or 5, and we moved down to North Washington's about 519 North Washington. That must have been 1950 or thereabouts.
That was your second?
That was the second.
Where was your first office?
In our home at 410 West Saginaw.
All right.
And I can remember the day that Vic Lair, who was at that time the director of planning for the city of Lansing, and he rang our doorbell, and I answered the door, and of course I knew him, and he asked if he could come in. He looked around, and the lower level was pretty well filled with crafting tables. Marie had withdrawn to the second floor, and I says, "Elmer, it looks to me like you're in violation of the zoning regulations."
Caught.
Yep, I was caught. So I said, "Well, we'll do what we can about it, Vic. Rather than issuing a summons, would you give me a little time to work it out?" And so we looked for a building, and we converted a house at 519 North Washington, that is now part of the campus of LCC.
The house still stands?
No, that was torn down.
It was torn down.
Yep.
All right.
So that was the second office.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. The third office was the Cherry Street School. Ed Beam, the realtor, arranged the sale for us, and or the purchase, I should say. And it was only sometime later that I found out of all the people that had looked at that building and decided they couldn't use it. And the Board of Education was about to tear it down when we came in with an offer. And I think we bought the whole kit and caboodle for $35,000, which, of course, we didn't have. Yeah. But the Chrisman Company, Harry Conrad, somehow or another had faith in us, and he arranged a loan so that we could do a pretty fair job of converting the school into an office. And that was a real good move for us, because in a relatively short time, our workforce had increased to 25, 30. I don't think we ever had more than 35 people.
Had you had that many at the house there?
Oh, no, the house would only take care of 10 or 12.
Okay. Mm-hmm. When did you go to the schoolhouse?
I think it was about 1958.
Okay.
Why? 1958 was a great year for us, because we moved the office, and Marie and I decided that if we were going to give our kids the benefit of a European tour, we should do it while Joyce was still in high school. Mm-hmm. So surreptitiously, we planned for 10 months in Europe, 10 weeks in Europe. And I was afraid that if we made a public announcement of it, that clients might question it. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until we had everything in line, and probably a month before we left, that we finally told people that we were going to be gone for 10 months. Mm-hmm. It was simple. We put another mortgage on the house and took off.
But you had a staff that could carry
on. Oh, yes, sure.
Yeah.
Ed Jackson was coming along very well at that
time. When did you change, Elmer, from the what I'll call the little partnership when you started, and to the Manson, Jackson, and Kane organization that I was aware of?
At first, of course, we were a partnership. After we had, Ed Jackson joined us real early. Bill Kane came along. There was a fellow by the name of Dixon Wilson. At one time, his name was part of the firm name.
Was this at the house then on Michigan Avenue?
This was in Washington.
Washington Avenue?
It was Manson, Jackson, Wilson, and Kane. Okay. One of our clients said it kind of sounded like running a stick up and down a picket fence. So I think, let me think of it a minute here. Because I believe that we formed MJK as a corporation in 1961.
All right.
And
this was actually after you moved into the schoolhouse, then.
Oh, yes, yes.
Uh-huh. All right.
And so the firm name was established, and as our staff grew in abilities, we would appoint them to the board.
Okay.
And at one time, I think we had 12 members of the board, which was practically all of the registered architects.
I see.
So that.
But prior to that time, it had been still a partnership, basically.
You know, with the main
participants.
Okay. I don't know what the difference is, but now folks call themselves professional corporations, and I think we were just a plain old corporation.
Right.
I know we paid taxes.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. Why did you go to the schoolhouse over? What was the driving force there? Why did you pick that place?
Well, one of the things which we had as a criteria was to stay in the inner city. I don't want to exactly say downtown, but in those days, the Central Business District was the place to be with business. And so we wanted to be relatively close to that, which we were, because oftentimes if I had a meeting in City Hall, I would walk to the City Hall rather than drive. And of course, the other thing is economic, because we could afford it. And we didn't have much money. So, and it was on the market. It was available.
Did you see it as a structure that had some unique architectural features, or what? Were that any part of that decision?
I suppose all of those things have some bearing on it, but we did not particularly choose it because it was good architecture. As a matter of fact, I suppose we violated some of the architecture, because the original building had a little projection out in front, which would be a weather vestibule. And we removed the weather vestibule and put a two-story glass window into the stairwell, which I thought neatened it up a bit and gave it a little modern look. And I still think it looks like a nice, pardon me, a nice building there on Cherry Street. And I think it did help improve the what is now called the Cherry Hill neighborhood.
Yes. What, Elmer, go through some of the, maybe some of the, what I'll call major things, activities, which your organization worked on in those early years. You mentioned, of course, the doing the chamber thing with the powerhouse, but and then the church, of course, and the initial school things. But what kinds of things did you do that you feel were perhaps relatively significant in those early days?
Well, of course, I should mention the professional societies, because I think that everyone should contribute a representational amount of time to the benefit of their profession. So I went through the chairs. I was president of the Mid-Michigan chapter of the AIA, and that would have been about 1951-1952.
And the AIA is?
American Institute of Architects. And then there's another one, the MSA.
Okay.
And that is the Michigan Society of Architects. And I was president of that in 1955.
Okay.
So I have been active. At one time, I was a member of a National Public Relations Committee with meetings in Washington. And I have, I hope I have contributed to the AIA, but I think that I have gotten a lot from the AIA. A lot of good people. And you go to a convention and you listen to the speakers, and then you go and talk with your friends and find out how they're doing and how they're solving the problems that you're facing. So the Institute has been very helpful to me. The other activities, I should mention my wife's activities, because I support her and those things, but she has been active in the Lansing Symphony, and she was, I think, president of Pro Symphony, and, well, I guess I'll just say she has done a lot in that area. And we have both been interested in the cultural aspects. As a matter of fact, Jim, I might insert something here, that as far as the changes that have occurred in the city of Lansing since we came, maybe I can give you an example of
that. Sure, that would be helpful.
That the symphony gave their programs in the old Pruden Auditorium until the ceiling started falling in. But in order to fill the seats, they had what they called pop concerts. And so we'd put card tables around and serve refreshments. And so that made a small group take up the entire floor area. But at one time, we were running out of chairs. And so I go backstage and I dash into all the rooms, and there was one lady there in a black dress. And I said, "May I borrow your chair?" And she didn't say anything, so I took it. Imagine my surprise when the concert got underway. She was the featured soloist. I don't remember what her name was.
You stole your chair.
I hope she doesn't know who I was. But symphony was a very low-key thing at that time. So I believe in these intervening years, the cultural enrichment of the city of Lansing has really come a long, long way.
Okay.
The if Romeo Tada, the former conductor of the Lansing Symphony, you could see how the symphony spends money now, he'd turn over in his grave. But, the symphony has really done well. I give a lot of credit to Sandra Caffé, the manager, but Ted Sondag and others have been really helpful, and I guess you just got to say fundraising and getting people interested in it. And the recent concerts out at Wharton Center have been excellent. So
that was a thing which over those years then has, which was here when you came?
Yes, but it has developed.
But it has
what? My change is that let me add another one. I think that Lansing is, I'll just say one of the outstanding places in Michigan for the professional theater and also the amateur theater. And I feel real fortunate to have somewhat of a part in that growth and activity, because I haven't done too much with the civic players other than buy tickets and be supportive. Mm-hmm. But John Peaks and Robinson, anyway, out at the Ledges. And they were trying to have a winter program in the, what was the former Lutheran church out there. The building officials were after them because they did not have proper electrical hookups and all that stuff. And so I was helpful to them. And concurrent to that time, this idea had been a long time forming, but the idea of, yes, there was the Metro Affairs, I guess, committee, maybe it was an association, Metropolitan Fine Arts Association.
Yeah.
And, I should remember who were some of the leaders in that. But I remember talking with Sue Mills, who became president of the Junior League, that really what we should have in Lansing was a center for the arts, a more active organization than the Metropolitan Fine Arts Council, because the council members...
Okay, back up a little.
Okay.
The council...
I had been telling you about the Metropolitan Fine Arts Council and Sue Mills,
right,
who became president of the Junior League. And we had a meeting every week in the conference room of MJK, and Sue and her colleagues, and we'd bring other people in, and we hammered out the Center for the Arts.
When did that all happen?
That was one of those things that took a long time generating. I believe that it was 1975,
all right,
that we actually bought the old Dan O'Shaughnessy's old Plymouth automobile agency, mm-hmm, on South Grand, and had the money to convert it to a theater, a foyer for general events, mm-hmm, and the Lansing Art Gallery. I was president of the Lansing Art Gallery about that time.
All right.
The Art Gallery takes great pride in claiming that they were the ones who started it, because we were the only group that had any money other than the Junior League. And so we put $1,000 down to get an option on that building.
Oh, all right.
And there was a fellow from Rio whose wife did belly dancers, but I can't remember his name. And he and I had a dog and pony show. So we went around, and I believe we raised $100,000.
Okay.
And I believe that the Junior League prepaid rent and this, that, and the other thing, so they contributed about $20,000 of that. We should have had $150,000. We started with not enough money, but we were able to get the building, get a theater. I can remember Schmidt, Ian Schmidt's father. Not that makes an awful lot of difference. They're out in, I think, Tahoe now. But he was the one who pushed through getting those comfortable seats from American Seating. I don't know who he knew over there, but anyway, it was done. And that theater, I think, is one of the very comfortable, both physically, sitting in the seats. And we never did have an acoustical consultant, but it works quite well. It's only 250 seats. But John Peaks and his cohort, John wanted to put the theater on the other diagonal of the building so that it would be, the stage would be over the old grease pits. And John said, wouldn't it be fun to have a hole in the stage, and then I could pop up out of that hole? But it didn't work. We put the theater where it would adjacent to the bump shop. Mm-hmm. And we never did have money enough to raise a beam in the wall enough to give headroom from backstage to the dressing room. And I think that the headroom is about 5'3". And I saw Carmen Decker the other day, and we were remarking that certainly the Center for the Arts has turned out well. And I said, Carmen, does it still have that bump your head beam? And she says, yes, I still have bumps on my head. But anyway, the cultural aspects, I think, have benefited Lansing. At that time, we had some friends in Midland. He was a chemical engineer. And they said that one of the things that had persuaded them to accept a position in Midland was because the cultural activities that occurred in the community. And I am quite sure that the business and industry in Lansing have found it easier to attract qualified personnel because of the cultural enrichment that exists in the community today. Mm-hmm. So, what's your next question? I don't know whether I answered that one adequately.
Right. Yeah, that's good. Take me through some of the things which MJK would have done. Some of the, what I call, major renovations, buildings, constructions, things which you remember that were kind of unique.
Jim, I'm afraid I'm a fellow that would much prefer to look to the future than in the past.
Well, but you have to talk about those things.
Yeah, okay.
A little bit.
As I say, for General Motors, we did a number of the smaller projects that didn't go to Detroit, mm-hmm. and they would comprise anywhere from 20 to 50% of the work in the office.
Mm-hmm.
We were fairly successful in schools. At that time, there was a lot of schools being built, and I guess we got our share, at least for several years. We were one of the five or six top school architects, as rated by the Michigan Education Department, I might say, not the Architectural Association, but anyway, we were up in there for a number of years, and I think that eventually they just stopped issuing mm-hmm. that list.
Any schools locally here, Elmer?
Oh, yes, we did the Gardner Junior High on the south okay. side of town.
Sure.
Willow Street School comes to mind. We never did much for East Lansing,
okay.
but we did schools in Heartland, Alpena.
College, MSU?
Oh, yes. We did all the married student housing at MSU.
All right.
And I think it's still true that MJK did more buildings on the MSU campus than any other architect.
All right.
Now, of course, the buildings that we did were quite small, but there was a large number of them. And we did the food stores, did a little building, Wilson Hall,
mm-hmm.
In back of the International Center.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. We were never a front runner at MSU, but we did a fair amount of work for them.
If you were to think back over all the projects and things you worked on, would you have any one that would really come to mind as the most unique that you did?
Oh, gee.
Or is that a...
Well, we're proud of all of them.
Sure.
I'm thinking of the churches that we have done.
Which churches had you done some work with, though, huh?
Most recently, let me give you a general figure first. Out of the 30 or 35 years, we have done 35 major church projects. Mm-hmm. And I put it that way because adding a couple of classrooms or converting this, that, and the other thing really doesn't count as a major project. But Pilgrim Congregational Church on Pennsylvania Avenue here in town was one of our first church jobs. Repeat clients are always nice to have. And I said that the Methodist Church in Williamston was one of the first clients that I had. And I was called back on two different occasions to do additions to that building. Mm-hmm. So, that was nice. Let me see. We did the original building for the Oklahoma's Community Church. We did the Eastminster Presbyterian Church. And one of the side lights on that Norm Piper was chairman of the committee, and there was a fellow, maybe it was Kermit Olds from Oldsmobile, and Kermit had everything in order, just like they do down at General Motors. Mm-hmm. And he had Norm all primed. Norm would say, do we agree to this? Do we agree to that? And somebody in the back row said, oh, come on, Norm. We know what you're heading up to. I move that we approve the plans that Elmer has submitted. And that was that. At the time of the dedication, they gave me a list of adjectives that they wanted the church to be. And included in that was warm, inviting, and so on, worshipful. And it was up to me to convert some of those abstract adjectives into, I don't want to say a concrete building, but a real building. So we talked, and wood beams for economy, a cathedral-type ceiling, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the members of the church said that they came to church for the dedication service, and their daughter looked around and said, Mother, wouldn't this be a beautiful ski lodge? Oh, well, so it goes.
Well, you did accomplish that.
Yep. It was warm. It was inviting.
Yeah, sure was.
She liked it. And so I guess that's the important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently, our own church, the Central United Methodist Church, has done a major refurbishing program to convert it back to the way it was pre-1955. Mm-hmm. And that was a historical thing. We got black and white photographs of the... decoration and silver lead, which is now, we in Lansing take that silver lead paint and think nothing of it. But I was talking with Dave O'Leary, and he says, my friends in the paint industry said, what do you mean by having lead paint? As your company name, lead is poisonous. For a long time, Dave said, well, people in Lansing buy it. And I'm sure that they didn't have any lead in the paint that they sold. So eventually they changed their name, and the conversion is now one way to be O'Leary paint. But now I think it was silver lead that did the ceiling in the Bank of Lansing building, which is a very nice job. So we selected them to help us on the historic refurbishing of Central United Methodist. We had the black and white photograph. So they corrected the photograph for the perspective of the camera looking up at it. They enlarged it so that from a wee little photograph to full size. And the decoration looked pretty good. So all we had to do was sharpen up the image and make sure that the emphasis of that fuzzy design was similar to the one which we could see in the photograph. And then it was a question of selecting the colors. And we did not do it very scientifically, I know, but we tried to chip paint off, and we couldn't find what the original colors were. So we went over to the state capitol that was doing the fourth floor at that time, and incidentally, the architect for the church was Elijah Myers, and he was the architect for the state capitol. So we looked at the colors there, and we went down to Ingham County Courthouse, and we thumbed through books and all that sort of stuff. And then you have to make that personal selection, because the colors that you want to go together, it's when you get them all laid out on the table, then you sort the ones that will look good. And when the congregation first saw it, they were a little surprised at the sharp green. And so it had been there for a month or 6 weeks. And I asked Sid Short, our pastor, whether we should consider changing the green. And he said, oh, goodness, no. Because I mentioned that to somebody, and he said, oh, don't change the green. So apparently the more vibrant colors, which really are in very small quantities, and we had some guests with us at church recently, and the lady said, Elmer, this is beautiful. So I guess that's the way it works out. Anyway, we've had a lot of fun.
Elmer,
Jim,
oh, go ahead.
Before we I don't know how our time is doing.
Your time is our time.
But there's a whole other series of things which you ask the question of what have the developments been in Lansing?
Right.
And there's a group there of the penetrating Route 496.
Mm-hmm.
The Capitol complex, of which the State Heritage Center, the library, the museum, and the archives,
mm-hmm.
has just been complete. And the general economic development of the downtown area, I think, has been a major thing. And I was fortunate to be, let me add urban renewal to that list, too. I was fortunate to be in a position to be a technician somewhat behind the scenes for much of that. I was chairman of the Metro Affairs, the Highway Committee. It kept changing its name and changing the personnel, but always carrying on what would be best for Lansing.
And, this is part of the chamber.
It's part of the chamber. Yeah. Well, I was a member of the planning board at that time, so part of it came through the city, too.
Okay.
Let's talk about urban renewal.
Sure.
Mac Milks was a member of the council. I was on the urban renewal committee of the planning board before there was an urban renewal board.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, Ray Guernsey was the director of the planning department. So among the things we did was to plan a tour. We went down to Columbus, Ohio, and we looked at one of the early pedestrian malls. And we went on to Cleveland and looked at Erie View. A classmate of mine was happened to be head of their chief. He was not exactly director of the planning department, but he was a key player of the urban renewal that they were doing. And I'm not sure of this, but I think that the Kalamazoo Mall had been done at that time, so we went over to take a look at that.
Okay.
So we did quite a bit of research on that.
This would have been in the 50s, Elmer? When would this have been?
I would assume so, yeah.
Okay.
Well, let me see. If I was on the planning board from, that would have been about 61 to 65. I had a 4-year term. The mayor called me up, wanted me to run again, and I said, I think that it was Bowerman at that time.
Yeah.
And I said, Bill, that is such a prestigious position that it should be passed around. So after my 4 years, I passed it on to somebody else. So
go back to your...
When I was a member of the planning board, Mac was a member of the council, and we did an awful lot of work together. He was the front man, and I... listened and gave him the technical support that he needed. We almost had Hudson's convinced to come to downtown Lansing.
Interesting.
And I think their contact man was a fellow by the name of Carpenter. And he had told Mac that they would like to know that they would be received in a friendly manner by the other merchants.
Mm-hmm.
So Mac and I went to see Howard Grimes, who was then president of the Knapp store.
Mm-hmm.
And Howard was practically jumping up and down, because it would be the question of who had what lines. And Knapp's was a style leader in Lansing, and they had exclusive lines. And if Hudson's came in, that Knapp's might lose their exclusive lines. And I can remember we finally got him down to the point, well, it might be all right in 10 years, but not now.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And so I don't know whether that was a key point or not, but we never did get...
the support just wasn't there.
What?
The support was not there.
That's right. That's right. We could not go down and say that they would have the friendly support of the other merchants, which was too bad.
Yeah.
We formed the Urban Renewal Board. I'm trying to recall what preceded that because it took quite a bit of work on the part of the city. I guess I just can't remember. Anyway, we retained, or that is, the city retained the firm of Villick and Lehman, planners from Detroit, and they did a pretty good study of what could be done with urban renewal, the economic impact on the area and so on. And that was the basis for the Urban Renewal Board.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we got some support, although it was very quiet, from the Lansing Community College, because I think that Bill Gannon, in his own mind, felt that the community college downtown would be good for the college,
mm-hmm.
and it would also be good for the community. And that was quite a struggle because the Ingham Intermediate School District had some land out near Mason,
mm-hmm.
that they would have made available for the community college if it would locate there. And after the decision was made to locate downtown, the Ingham Intermediate Board came to MJK and we designed a skills center for that same site out there. Yeah. And I was trying to think of some of the other things that went along with the development of the urban renewal. Well, let me stick this one in now. The Broadway lunch, Mrs. Lewis.
Okay.
And if there ever was a miscarriage of justice, it was Don Reisig saying that poor Mrs. Lewis, she forgot a meeting and she just wasn't able to get there, and therefore he ruled that she should have another chance. I think it was the Urban Renewal Board or somebody in the city had a hearing and she didn't come, and they voted to proceed with the plan.
Okay.
And then Don gave her another chance. Now, the reason that I say that it wasn't poor Mrs. Lewis, because I think this was the planning board. I don't think it was the chamber, but anyway. There was a tempest in a teapot, because Mrs. Lewis had a valid claim. Her building had been appraised for $70,000, about $70,000.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, when the urban renewal people came through, they appraised it at $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
So $20,000 was making the difference of, at that time, I think it was a $15 or $20 million project, and it has now escalated to probably $50, $60
million. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, there were two or three of us that were to meet with Tom Sinus, who at that time was the attorney for Mrs. Lewis. And I was the only one that showed up. Tom showed up, and we were sitting in a dark corner of the Eagle Lunch on the east side of Michigan Avenue. And I said, gee whiz, this is quite unreasonable, because Mrs. Lewis should go along with the city and make the property available. And Tom, being the good attorney which he is, says, Homer, it's only money. And at that time, we had a group that was, maybe I better not mention names on this, but we thought that if we could raise the $20,000 and we couldn't persuade the urban renewal people or the city that they should augment the $50,000 that had been set to the $70,000 for which the, oh, I'm sorry, it was the city appraisal, the city assessment on the project. They valued it